Fairbanks City Council regular work session is called to order. It's 8:02 a.m. on Tuesday, March 17th. Madam Clerk, please call the roll.
Ms. Therrien is here, but she'll be with us later. She's doing something else at the moment. Mayor O'Neill?
Here.
Mr. Cleworth?
Here.
Ms. Sprinkle?
Here.
Ms. Tidwell?
Here.
Mr. Marnie?
I'm here.
Mr. Ringstead?
Here.
Item 2, resolution number 5201, as amended, a resolution inviting proposals from qualified developers interested in redeveloping city property at 123 Lacey Street, postponed from the March 9th meeting. I added, we handed out some handouts to you, so we have a new handout on your desk today about this process. I also just re-included the calendar, so you have that as a reference in case that didn't make it back to your desk after the last time. So this handout attempts to show the flow and the culmination of information that is being collected and how that will be transferred into an RFP. And so, you know, just a few reminders that the 60-day outreach period that we're in right now is not meant to be a stop, and the information collected is not meant to completely rewrite the RFP. Really what we're doing here is clarifying intentions of the city, so we make it the RFP less risky for a developer and more clear as to what community requirements or requests come about. And I think an important part here is on the back. You know, really, there's two different scenes here. I think thinking about, you know, what we want could be things that say we want more activity in the winter, and you know, that transcribes to giving a developer a clear idea of what we're looking for. It doesn't direct them into a box that says, this is what we want. It says these are the outcomes that are desired by the community, and using the experience of a developer is what we are requesting back within those boundaries. So, as you know, the RFI was released. That closes April 30th. Then we will have 30 days after that to continue the reviewal process. That includes incorporating stakeholder information that's been gathered from listening sessions and also information from the RFIs. My intent is to have periodic updates to you, including next week, the April 13th, and provide as much time as possible, at least 2 weeks, to give you an opportunity to look at the RFP. Again, this RFP should not be drastically different than what you've seen over the last year. It should be something that is just clarified based on community input and public input. So I'll stop there and ask if there are any questions or any more discussion about this item. Ms. Sprinkle.
Mayor, I think this is really, really helpful. Thank you again for doing this. It would be really great to see the survey questions or how your survey looks. I'd love to see what kind of questions you're asking. And I guess what you're saying is that we would see results of those and the listening sessions just to see what was garnered in those things. Great.
Yeah, so at every part where there's a star on that on the calendar or on the timeline, that's when I intend to come back to you with the information that we've gathered. So, you know, I want to bring the council along through this process. If you're interested, I'd like to invite you to each one of you to a listening session to participate and observe one of those sessions. We have about 7 scheduled. So would really enjoy having a council person at one of each of those, so you're able to see the process and hear how this is different and building on what we have before. And I'm happy to share those questions with you, Ms. Sprinkle.
Also, seeing is believing. This is really, really, I think, helpful for anybody who can say, what do they mean by these things? And I think this is fabulous. So thank you.
Yeah, thanks. In these photos, you can just see that, you know, the gray part right here on the left side, if you look on the right image, you see where there's some awnings, there's some there's windows that allow for retail stores to, you know, advertise their wares. Of course, you see on the sidewalk that, people are enjoying a nice, sunny, snowy day. That's a joke. And then, you know, right next to the entrance, you see this little change that says Moose's Pub, right? So it shows an entry to another business that activates that whole street. And seeing images like this really, like you said, Ms. Sprinkle, just kind of help visualize what we're talking about, not directing somebody into a box, but, you know, setting boundaries that relate to community values and expectations. Mr. Marnie.
Have we received any responses to our RFI?
Unsure. It's still open.
I understand that, but okay. Thank you.
I don't know, but we can find that out. Any other questions from the council or discussion? Ms. Tidwell.
So looking at this timeline, this changes the timeline really from like not all that much. I mean, we're looking at a less than a month difference between what we were originally looking at and this. Is that correct?
The RFP release is scheduled for May 1.
Okay.
One more call. Renegan? Okay, we'll move on to ordinance number 6343, an ordinance authorizing the lease of a portion of City Hall to the Fairbanks Children's Museum. This has been advanced to our Monday meeting on March 23rd. Ms. Maple, I'll invite you to come up to the testimony box as she's available here for any questions from the council. Ms. Sprinkle.
Hello, Mary.
Hi.
Lovely to see you. Can you give us any updates on the licensing or any of the child care information that you were waiting to talk
yeah.
about?
Yeah. I toured, Christina and I got to tour with the licensing agent, child care licensing, on Friday. And I had two major concerns that I thought they were going to require pretty big renovations, and they aren't. So the space is, especially since we're focusing on this pre-K age instead of infants, the space essentially just needs to be furnished. I mean, that's just as an understatement for that. But I thought that there would be a requirement for a lift, and that is only going to essentially, if we were to end up with a student that needed it, we would need to solve that problem when we came to it, but it's not something we preemptively need to do, which is really good news and means that there's not a really big expense other than the furnishing to mess with our timeline. So it was a really exciting walkthrough. Still a year, but it means, I mean, within this first year, but it means that fundraising and grant applications can all focus on furnishing instead of on renovations, which is less money to raise.
First, perfect. Thank you. Yeah. Perfect.
Mr. Ringstead.
Couple of questions. I saw in here we have an escape clause, 90 days if you change your mind, you have some point in the future, you can cancel the lease in 90 days. Why is there no escape clause for the city?
I didn't put the escape clause in.
Do you care? I mean, I don't know what's going to happen, that whatever happened, but I'm hoping you stay there forever. But it just seemed odd to write it one direction and not the other. Not your issue. Okay.
Is it fine. Something we put in, isn't that right?
Okay. Yeah. So we talked about the length of the lease, and I wasn't clear on it until I talked with you again, but it's not the lenders, it's donors that are asking for the longer term. They want to do in the capital. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, and I did get some confirmation, and as was requested by the council, Mike and I followed up as well. It's 40 years was acceptable by Rasmussen Foundation was specifically who I already have a grant coordinator. We're already talking about this project. And it's that if they're going to invest in capital improvements and capital projects, they want to know you're not going anywhere. So they typically, that would be because you own something, which is why in our current lease, they weren't willing to invest until we could buy the building, which we, $6.5 million. So the Rasmussen Foundation and other large donors like that, foundation donors, 40 years was the number that they came back with, was that they felt was acceptable to invest as if it were a capital project that we owned.
And you're comfortable with that number?
I am, yeah. In my draft with my edits, I changed it to 40 also.
We had concern from some of us about floor covering. That gym floor and protecting that. Have you looked at all about what it will take to do that?
I have told the designers that I've been working with that's a piece that we'll need to do, that we need to protect it. I also looked up, and I told you about this, but I forgot to bring pictures. I also looked up, I think having the floor visible adds something pretty incredible to what we can do for the museum. And so I started looking to see if there were any other children's museums that were in old gyms. And I found an example of an exhibit that they used old gym floor, and it had, basketballs that there was some, I won't pretend that I can understand it, but it was like as you were bouncing the basketballs, it was projecting movement onto the wall. But so it just got me thinking that whatever sort of preservation methods we take, I don't want it to hide them, because I think that there's really cool stuff that we could use to honor them.
You're looking into options?
Yes, absolutely.
Ms. Sprinkle?
And speaking about this with people who care about downtown, and as far as the outward-facing energy that Children's Museum brings, I was concerned about it being behind the building and would it be hidden and all, gosh, what will people know? Mm-hmm. I'm going to make the point that your building right now, as you enter it from the back of the building, it's still kind of hidden.
Yeah.
But in speaking to Mike Sanders, he said something about the north wall, no windows, that you guys could do something amazing with that. And as far as, like, here's the Children's Museum, that would be very outward-facing, and I would love to think that you would chase that.
Yeah, I can tell you that when we did the initial concept development for our current space, we were looking, it has the same thing that on two out of four of those walls are completely windowless, and we had, when we were envisioning what we do with that space, if you're familiar with Summer Hom's barn quilts, she's done some big murals so it's a larger scale, and so I had already spoken with her about the potential of doing some sort of collaborative piece with kids. So in just even in the renderings of that space, it was, that one side of the building was a big welcome and a big colorful I don't know, ownership of the building, like ownership of the space, making it really clear what was going on in there. Because you're right, in the current space on Cushman, it's one, there's a sign on Cushman, but even that, often people go to that door and it's locked and then they assume that we're just not there. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, we are around the other side and have ideas for how we can invest in the space in a way that brings attention to it while still honoring the space itself.
And you'll be going back and forth between that and the park. So I think it's really a great marriage of imagery and, you know, we're here.
And so. I've reached out to Mayor Hopkins about use of the park as well to see what how much we can do over there as well. So
great. Thank you.
Mr. Barney?
I agree with Mr. Ringstead that the city should have an escape clause also. And I also agree with Mr. Ringstead that the 40-year lease is appropriate. So just that's my two cents. And I really think that it's a good mix for you going in here. I think it's going to give livelihood to an old building.
Mr. Kleeward?
Thank you, Mayor. I think everybody's on board with the project. I mean, it's just a few little glitches you need to iron out here. But, you know, speaking of the term and the escape clause and all that, maybe we'd ask the city attorney if he has any recommendations or ideas on that.
Yeah, thank you, Councilman Kleeworth. And I think that Councilman Ringstead and Marnie are pointing out something that should be included in the contract, and it's just a meeting of the minds on, you know, what the escape clause, or, you know, they're generally in a fixed term lease called break clauses, but what termination looks like, so that we can kind of go our separate ways. So I can craft some language and take a look at that. Thank you.
So maybe between now and Monday, you know, Mike could get together with city attorney and all that, and the mayor, and see what you can come up with on that. That'd be appreciated. I like the steam pipes.
Ms. Sprinkle.
Meredith, is the other entity that wants to go in, would they go in sooner than the children and the babies? When do you see that happening, if it happens? Next month, 2 months? What if we sign this lease tomorrow?
I think that as soon as they can furnish it, they'd be in there. And we have already submitted a grant proposal looking for funding to furnish a permanent space for them, for so, the Wellness Coalition.
Okay, great. So there'd be energy right away. That's fantastic. Thank you.
Ms. Tidwell.
Is all the activity that the Wellness Coalition doing, is it just for that, like, young adult age group, or are they going to do other stuff too?
Their mission is to do intergenerational programming. So I know that their goal is actually to be engaging with a broader age group, and that the hope is having a permanent space will allow for that.
Any final questions or discussion on this item?
Is there ever a time that you would mix the older kids and mentoring the smaller kids, or is that always going to be a division? And I'm just curious, because it could be interesting. I don't know where that goes.
It would. Yes, it would require that it was programming where parents were present for both ends of the spectrum. Yeah. Yeah, we do field trips where it's young kids and then kids that have technically aged out of the museum, but they have a buddy that's a younger kid, and then all of a sudden they love playing at the museum again, even though they're 15. So there is a lot of opportunity there. It just requires a different level of supervision.
Okay. Thanks for being here this morning.
Thank you.
All right, item 5, an ordinance amending Fairbanks General Code Section 7440, sales and excise tax requirement definitions, Section 74116, room rental tax. Oh, I'm so sorry. I realize I am out of order again. Going back, ordinance number 6344, an ordinance amending Fairbanks General Code Section 74302, exemptions from the gasoline excise tax advanced to March 23rd. Ms. Bell.
Thank you, Mayor, and good morning, council members. This ordinance removed part one of an exemption, and that part, what I'm hoping it will clarify who is responsible for the taxes, and it sets the code the same as the state. And to me, it sets, explains to the distributor who is responsible for the taxes. At your request, I did send out, our office sent out the ordinance and and instructions for communicating with council regarding this proposed change. I did receive one phone call, and there was a question about whether or not distributors could exempt gasoline with a certified used. And I explained that part one is the old part one is technically kind of wrapped up in what will be two, the former two, which is now the one. There was probably some confusion on the person. Because a person is a distributor when you read the definition of it. So there may be some comments to the council maybe to clarify the person. I don't know if we need to add a whereas with the definition of a person so that they can understand that it's the same as saying distributor. And that was the only comment that I have received.
Council questions or comments or discussion? Sprinkle.
Would instead of person, could you use entity? Would that solve that?
The person within the code, the person is defined. It's defined as an individual, company, partnership, limited liability partnership, joint venture, joint agreement, limited liability company, association. And it goes to a list of them as well as a direct buying retailer, a distributor, or combination acting as a unit. So once I explained what a person was and how it's defined in the code, then they understood that it meant them as well as a distributor.
Okay, we'll move on to item five for real. An ordinance amending Fairbanks General Code Section 7440, Sales and Excise Tax Requirement Definitions, Section 74116, Room Rental Tax Definitions, and Section 74118, Room Rental Tax Levy and Collection to add Marketplace Facilitator. This has not been introduced. Ms. Bell.
Thank you, Mayor. The last time we reviewed this, the marketplace facilitator had some terminology that we felt needed to be defined. So that let me know that maybe my definition needs to be changed. And so now I have removed what it means, and it is now stating just a person or entity. What I'm hoping that this will do is requires the marketplace facilitators to apply the tax, the 8% tax. Take for example, when you go to the Airbnb site, as an operator, I can see that Juneau and Anchorage requires a tax, but it doesn't state that the Fairbanks requires a tax. And in researching it with companies like Airbnb, they stated that, you know, it's not in our code, therefore it's not mentioned. So I'm hoping that by adding it to our code, that they will make an announcement that there is a tax and that they will assess that tax on behalf of the operator. And we've had quite a few operators that we've been working with that stated, you know, I didn't know it was a tax, even though there is a responsibility to research that information. But that would have been helpful for them if they had seen that Fairbanks has a tax and a tax was taken. So I'm hoping that this piece will help our local operators, especially those in short-term rental, to be aware that there is one It's asking the marketplace facilitator to take that tax on behalf of that operator. That will give them a notice that there is one in Fairbanks, and hopefully will draw them to kind of reach out to our office. And that's all I have regarding this ordinance.
Mr. Ringstead.
So, Margarita, are they the facilitators, Airbnb or whoever, are they collecting the tax, or are they just noting that there is a tax and it's still the property owner that pays the tax?
They will collect the taxes when you book through. Take, for example, if it was Airbnb, when you book, a part of what they're charging you would be that tax, but that would be passed on to the operator to pass on to us.
So those folks will be sending the city the money.
Right, correct. The operator would be.
I'm assuming that that's the vast majority of the folks that we're dealing with at this point. Does it still allow that then that other people, if you're doing it yourself, not through?
Oh, yes.
Facilitator, that part still stays on?
That still stays. Everything stays the same as far as an operator who may have multiple venues. That doesn't impede on them doing their part as well. If anything, this will help that operator with the short term through some sort of other platform. This will help them to know that there are some taxes that they have to take, and then it's taken on their behalf, and that they need to report it. So I'm hoping that it's more of a notification for them as well.
Ms. Sprinkle?
Margarita, do we then send this, once it, if it's passed, straight to Airbnb, VRBO?
Or the yes.
That's great.
And it would be my goal to do the same. If it passes on that first reading or before the first reading, that we notify all of these entities that we have information about that this is, you know, available, and this is how you can communicate to the council.
Thank you. Ms. Tidwell.
I think this is great and should be very helpful to those business owners. I wonder if once it's in place, do you think that Airbnb will share that data with us? So that we could like what they assessed, would they share that so that we could kind of cross-reference what's actually coming in?
Because of the way that we're putting it on the operator, they would not. It would be through the operator, but it will make the reporting to us easier for that operator that has an Airbnb, because they can have a reporting that just shows how much was taken out in taxes.
Mr. Cleworth.
Thank you, Mayor. So if an audit is done, would that go to the marketplace facilitator and not to the owner?
No, it would go to the owner. And the way that we're kind of monitoring it, they have to provide to us a report that comes out of the system. There's a report that when they file their sales taxes, they print out a report that's out of Airbnb. The easiest piece for them would be that amount of taxes that were withdrawn. And they can set it up that way now, but that would show us how much in taxes that Airbnb had withdrawn for during that period of time. So it would help them from that regard.
I guess I'm not terribly familiar with the marketplace facilitator, but do they upfront take the funds from a potential?
Yes.
Runner? Okay.
So when you book online for, if you did an Airbnb, for example, and I'm speaking from that because that's where I'm most familiar with, they will take the nightly rate, any type of fees that you assessed as the operator, they will also take their fee, because they have a fee as well for using the Airbnb. And if this goes into place, all of it would all automatically take out the 8% of taxes as well. So when I pay, I'm paying through Airbnb, than all of this I'm paying for at once as the person who's renting the place. And then they pass through the funds to the operator. And the operator will in turn report and pass it through to the city.
So if I own a B&B and it is booked through a facilitator, they're going to be responsible for remission to the city, but no.
No, they will be responsible for the 8%, applying the 8% tax. And the operator, the one who owns that property, is responsible for reporting that the funds to the city. Now, Anchorage has it that way. Anchorage has it set up where the Airbnb takes the taxes and remits the payments. We are not asking for that route because my understanding Airbnb works, it works by zip codes, and the borough and the city share some zip codes. So in this case, it will have to be through the operator, because if you happen to have a zip code that's in the borough, then you would be reporting to them versus, you know, within the city.
Thank you.
Mr. Ringstead.
Margarita, your last comment was kind of where my head was going. Have you talked with the borough how they do it? I mean, it would make sense that we were somewhat doing same, similar way of handling these.
The borough is handling it similar to us, where we're identifying short-term rentals,
Are they doing it this way?
They are working directly with operators. That's what we're working directly with operators. This will help the borough in that it will now state that Fairbanks has a room rental tax. And it will, if anything, it will help them in identifying for those operators that are outside of the borough to probably question, and outside of the city, I should state, to inquire about taxes if they're not filing through the borough. It
makes sense for them to do the same thing we're doing now.
Mr. Byrne.
What kind of bump do you think we're going to get from this as far as the bed tax?
Well, I commend our staff who works with this area. She has identified over 82 short-term rentals that she's reached out to. She brought in 2025 over $350,000 in short-term rental bed tax funds, room rental, that we're not reporting.
Margarita, do I understand that most of those operators just didn't know that there was a tax?
Correct.
It wasn't as if they were avoiding it. They just weren't aware.
Right. We had quite a few that weren't aware of the taxes, and we worked with them to get the reporting done. And the biggest question, the biggest response we received was, when I go to the site, it doesn't say Fairbanks has a tax. And they're correct, but it does have a statement that says, you know, you need to research your local area. But this way, with it being there, Fairbanks will be listed. This is what our tax would be. And we would be listed just like Juneau or Anchorage. And this is the first step to having that done.
Mr. Clearworth.
Yeah. Margaret, I'm still a little confused. On the second page there, it says, every seller or marketplace facilitator required to collect the tax levied by this article must secure the tax from the guest or renter. It makes it sound like either or to me, and you're saying no, it would be the B&B that's responsible for that sales tax.
It's either or, because this applies to if I had a property and I was renting to you directly without using Airbnb. So we're covering both cases. We're covering the case where the operator is using a marketplace facilitator, and we're covering the case where I am directly renting my home out or renting my property. So you're covering both areas. This not only applies to marketplace facilitators, but this part also applies to your local hotels and places like that.
Okay, but again, it makes it sound like you might be getting remissions from that facilitator.
Well, the seller, the marketplace facilitator will have to apply that tax and takes, the way it works is they collect it and then they pay the operator. So right. The operator is the one, so they will collect it, but they pay the operator, and the operator is the one has to report it.
I'm with you now. Okay.
You've never done an Airbnb?
No, ma'am.
Just checking.
I actually have a house.
Oh, my gosh.
I just like the mechanics of the numbers.
Practically, as a renter, when you go to a site in Fairbanks, it'll now say 8% sales tax on it, and it'll be calculated as part of the cost, whereas before there was none.
Correct.
So the operator just had to subtract that from what they get without that being collected by those.
So this is just a good flag.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Excellent.
Yeah. And it helps our local operators, too.
It does.
Okay. So we'll move on to item 6, city rep to the Fairbanks Economic Development Corporation Ardor Committee. So the FEDC is now in Ardor, and they have requested our participation in designing their new path as an Ardor. And there's a city rep identified there. So we just requested that anybody interested in that would submit their name to Danny. So I'm going to hand it over to Danny and see who we have interested.
In the last page of your packet, Council, there's a memo from me. It gives some basic information about the Ardor Committee and answers some questions the Council had previously. Two Council members have contacted me. Three as of this morning. So Mr. Marty, Ms. Therian, and Ms. Sprinkle all expressed interest in serving as the city rep on the Ardor Committee.
So I just wanted to open it up to discussion with the council and just come to a consensus of from the council of who wants to serve on that committee. Would Mr. Marty or Ms. Sprinkle, would you like to say your interest or...
I do have interest in this as a topic anyway. I've been pushing really hard for the Ardor to be bolstered, moved from FEDCO, or to FEDCO, and this has been, passion project is the wrong word, but this has been something I've been working with for about a year and a half. So I would be very interested in serving for this.
Mr. Barney?
I, likewise... I believe I was one of the original sponsors to get the Ardor moved from the borough to FEDCO. I've been sitting on the board of directors as ex officiato at Explore Fairbanks for 6 years. Last December, I was asked to become a board member for the Downtown Association, and I accepted. So that I'm pretty much involved in that whole circle of things. So I know I'm out in October. But I think I can get the ship to get out of port and get sailing on this because I'm that kind of guy. So anyway, that's my two cents.
Unfortunately, Ms. Therian is
testifying
on one of our legislative priorities. So discussion? Ms. Tidwell,
you're our rep right now on FEDCO?
I'm no.
Oh, you are?
No.
Okay.
I'm sitting on the Economic Development Commission.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And that's still intact and planning to be?
Yes.
Correct.
Okay. And that's where this came from. So it's going to be interesting to see, having released it into the wild, what happens to it.
Okay.
So I'm keeping an eye on it from afar. And you're a voting member now, correct?
I don't know if they've officially changed the bylaws or not. I'm unsure.
Okay. And Crystal, you were a voting member, were you not? Okay.
Oh, so maybe, I guess maybe, but I forgot that is different.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yes, I'm a voting member.
That's good. That's real good. Do you know when they're looking to get this thing started?
Yeah, she indicated they'd like to hold their first meeting by the end of March. I'm not sure if that'll happen. I think it depends on whether they get all of the membership squared away, but soon.
Thank you.
Mr. Fleaworth?
No.
Mr. Marnie?
I think we should hear from Ms. Therrien before we make a decision here.
Okay. We could move on to the rest of our items, which are not very many, to see if Ms. Therrien will join us. Sound good? All right.
Yeah.
Let's put that on hold for a second. We'll go to the Finance Committee report. And Ms. Bell.
Hey, good morning again. The Finance Committee is scheduled to meet on Thursday, March the 26th. We'll be reviewing the February 28th financial statements, and we'll continue our discussion about parking services, and we had a couple of items on sales taxes that we mentioned at the last meeting. And that is, and we will also be looking at the 2025 financial statement, all funds, and see how everything comes together. We will also be reviewing that, and that is a pre-audited statement.
Questions? Mr. Martin.
Well, it's not, it's basically concerning your department. You've had some turnover. Can you go over that for us, please?
Yes, it has been a very interesting a month or so. Ms. Katie McConaughey, she accepted a position in Michigan. That's where she's from. And I promoted Sarah First as our grants administrator, now our controller, our payroll staff, accounting specialist, Jennifer Payen, is now the grants administrator. And we just put out an offer to a young lady to handle the accounting specialist and payroll. So I hope to be somewhat fully staffed in April because we do have one staff member that will be out on leave for about 3 months. So just bear with us if it takes us a little bit to respond. Our audit is still on target, so we should be getting things done. We're actually almost done with the audit. We're just waiting for data from the state on a couple of numbers, the pension numbers that we have to include in there. But we're very close to it. So we're on target, but maybe moving a little slower than usual.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right, item 8, mayor and council member comments. I have just a few comments. There is a group called the Arctic Urban Regional Corporation that's in town this week. They, the borough is a member of this organization, and so there's a contingency of folks from Arctic countries that are in town. And over the next few days, they have a summit that talks about, you know, doing business in Arctic communities, cultural entrepreneurship. This morning, the mayors will have a reception, or sorry, I just read that word, but a panel. There's also a reception tonight and other activities. So if you're interested in that, it should be a pretty neat event that the borough has been working on to build coalitions across Arctic communities around the world. And then just wanted to note that Thursday we continue with our Citizens Academy, and we have the city legal and city clerk on deck. Exciting. Any other council, any council member comments? Ms. Sprinkle.
Maybe partnering to what you've just said about the gathering you're going to, I had quite a group of friends who went to Whitehorse this past week for the Arctic Winter Games. And one of those people, I hope you'll meet with him soon. He is so excited about what he saw in Whitehorse as far as development, ground floor activities, building styles, and I think it would be really helpful for us and you, I think, to talk with him and garner what they're doing. There's something going on in Whitehorse. It's really exciting, and I think there's a lot more we can gather from that city to see what energy we can get from that. So I'm going to leave it at that.
Yeah, great. Mr. Clearwood?
Just a question for Mike. Do you know the schedule for Weeks Field? I see 8th Avenue down here between Barnett and Cowles is posted finally, which is great news. Is Weeks Field going to be the next focus of public works snow removal?
Well, let me look on the website real quick. I'll tell you.
And then you drive down 8th Avenue, and I know Lonnie goes down it. It's about a foot higher than Barnett or Cowles. And and I know I'm getting other complaints over in the Weeksfield area. And I told them, please be patient. It's not going to thaw anytime soon, apparently. But
well, they took a blade. They bladed it, but and they did 10th Avenue the other day.
Good. Yeah, that's right. I saw 10th.
Yeah. So Weeks.
Mr. Cotter did mention to us or let us know that they're going to 6 days a week. They've been at 7 days a week, almost like day and night crew, but they're staying at, they thought they would be able to reduce down, but to keep working at that, so we're not in a really bad situation when breakup comes. And then they are aware of those big drops where they've, yeah, so trying to work on tapering those out too.
Good.
Mr. Sanders.
Oh, sorry. Weeksfield is scheduled for the day shift today, actually, March 17th.
Okay. So. Thank you, Mike.
You're welcome.
The other thing I had on the agenda is we have a new member downtown. It is a lady who comes downtown every day and sits with her back to the street and her face to the wall by the Mecca Bar there. And is totally bundled up and layered up. Where she goes at night, I have no idea. In the daytime, though, she spends her whole day sitting there, and everybody's concerned about her. I know the service patrol has contacted her several times, and she refuses to go anywhere. But where she goes at night, I don't know. I haven't been able to track that down. But if we could use any resources we have, it's not an inebriate case. It's more of a mental issue. You could maybe find out a little bit more about her. Everybody comes in and says, we think she's going to die out there in the cold, and somehow she survives. So,
yeah, we'll get all of our resources, addressing that.
Okay. Any other comments from council members?
I know we talked about it a little bit in our last dig meeting. Have we gotten any more questions about the facades project at all? Have you gotten any?
Nothing significant. Had one application that they didn't even have a property downtown, so that one I had to deny. But we'll get them all. Like they'll. Every time we have a grant, it's always the last minute. And Danny, I see Danny shaking her head. It's always 5 o'clock on the day of. It's I don't know why, but that's how it always works.
Yeah. That's the same sort of behavior we've seen with the RFIs and the RFPs too. To your point, Mr. Marnie, Madam Clerk.
Just to follow up with the council, at the last regular meeting, you placed a condition on a waive protest for the Green Life Supply about their good standing with the state, and they contacted me this week and worked with me, and they do are now in good standing. I reported that to the state. I just wanted to report back to the council that everything is thumbs up there.
Thank you. So if we go back up to the Ardor Committee, what's the will of the council? If we wait until our next work session, we're going to be into an April meeting, so we won't have one Should we do it on Monday? Next, how do we do that? Yeah, I think we can do that. I mean, we're still.
Imaginary?
Or does is it up to you? I guess I don't know what we're doing.
I mean, it's up to me, I guess, about how the process goes, and I've just, you know, directed that it's a council consensus. Yeah. But we can certainly add that and come up with some creative way to vote, not vote.
Well, it'd be good to have that.
Yeah, I agree. Okay. Well, our next work session is April 7th. We're moving right along through this year, aren't we? 8 a.m. And we're adjourned at 8:52.